Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV. It is the final word. It's Monday. Liverpool are 16 points clear at the top of the Premier League with the game in hand. We've just beaten Manchester United. We're 30 points ahead of them. Oh my God. Chris Pajak, Adam Rhodes, Steve Hoare, join me for this one, gentlemen. There was no shortage of people who wanted to be on these couches today.
Yeah, there's a queue of people waiting outside.
Literally, a bunch of people had to lock the door. Chris Pajak has stepped back in on a Monday, decided to sack everything else off in his life just to be back involved on the show. Chris, we absolutely battered them. It's the only thing that it was just the scoreline that didn't necessarily reflect that. Ultimately, you watch it back, watch Match of the Day back, and it was just 10 minutes of Liverpool just pummeling Man United's face until inevitably we won.
And it's not surprising, and it never will be surprising with this Liverpool side. I mean, they turn up, they go out each and every week, and they just dominate teams. And I said that on my Match Reaction last night, and I truly believe it. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has walked out of there with a 2-0 loss, and he's bought himself time in the job. Because that's how good Liverpool are now, that a 2-0 defeat is going to buy someone a little bit more time in the hot seat.
Yeah, that's true. It's absolutely true. Adam, it was one of those games where the only criticism of the game is that we didn't win 5-0.
Yeah.
And this is, they're talking about our, look, and the people who disagree with me, with comparing them to the rivalry with the Ev, I don't have the same level of hatred towards Everton as I do towards Manchester United.
It's hard to, isn't it? Because, like, on issues away from football, Everton have been quite supportive and brilliant, Danny. So, and they're sort of like your less talented little brother.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, I'm going to bully you because I'm your big brother and that's part of life and that's why we're here. We're here to make you feel a bit shit sometimes. But we also kind of like you and just stay over there. And, and you stay there.
Yeah.
Whereas Man United are... were brought up to hate them.
Oh yeah, they're like a pedo stepdad.
Yeah, literally. You know, yeah. A pedo stepdad who's been getting away with it for 20 years and taking all our sweets at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, but that's the thing for it, is the sense of genuine. Like I've never felt more relaxed going into one of these games, but at the same time, I had a real edge underneath that I desperately wanted us to go and batter them.
I actually felt more confident going into the game at Old Trafford earlier this season. And I think it was because it would have just annoyed me if we'd have gone this season and it was like 36-1-1 and the 1 and the 1 were both them.
Yeah.
It would have just, it would have done me head in forever.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of Man United friends in comedy who like would never have let me live that down. And considering it was a 2-0 game that could have been 4, 5, 6 or 7, I've never enjoyed a 2-0 game that should have been more or less because for a large period of it, I was like, they could nick this. They could nick a point here with a sly little goal, a dodgy bounce, a mistake. Like, we really needed that second goal for a long time. And I'd have been absolutely devastated to draw a game 1-1 with Man United with this current Liverpool team after that performance.
That's where we were at, though, Steve. Is, and I was thinking this during the game, they had that spell in the last 10 minutes where they were putting some decent footy together. And I say this, they were putting a bit of decent footy together, but ultimately they threw everything else. They were just throwing haymakers by that point and just trying to land the blow. You know, the point that David De Gea asks to go up for the corner right at the end tells you everything about them. They were desperate to try and get something out of it. And the best they really could have hoped for at that point was a point.
Yeah, I was sitting watching it with my mate and my son, and I was getting dead nervous again. And I was thinking, you know, if they score, we're 14 points clear at the top of the league with the game in hand. Like, not the end of the world, but then but then you can't do it because it's Man United.
Yeah.
You're not having it because there's no way in a million years we're not beating you today because we have been so much better. It will be an absolute travesty if you use Nick something. And that's what it was. In hindsight, again, league table, it wouldn't probably really have mattered. Again, 14 in a game, but because it's them, you just got to beat them. You've got to, and especially when you're that much better than them, you've got to show them that much better. You've got to put them in their place. And to be fair, Liverpool, up until in front of goal, did that. We outran them. We outplayed them. We just looked like, because we are, we a different level. It was 30 points, and it was 30 points evident on the pitch. Like, I remember you get games at Anfield sometimes when they were well better than us, and we'd still nick the odd win.
Yeah.
And there were times when we go to Old Trafford and get one, but there was also times when they would just batter us. Yeah. And because they were well better, and they kind of just, I don't know, like rub your nose and like prove it, you know, here's how good we are.
Yeah.
We're just going to run rings around you all game. And they've done that to us before. And that's what, it's kind of what we did to them. You know, 5-0 wouldn't have flattered us. Like Chris said, 2-0, they've got off. You know, they're all right. They won't publicly admit it. I mean, Solskjaer might, but he's fucking insane. But he might just, he'll say something about like, you know, Liverpool put their best team out, so we deserve credit. But it's one of those where we should have battered them. And that's like, it's not a regret, it's a great win, but that could have been one of those.
If it ends 1-0, I'm leaving that game with a bit of regret that we've not done more. But ultimately, Chris, Salah sticking the second one in, and the timing of it and the way he does it and everything that followed. I'm saying this, I'm sat here like offering some level of critique. I'm not arsed. I'm genuinely not really that arsed that we didn't batter them, because we wouldn't have had, I don't think we'd have had necessarily had the same reaction if we're 4-0 up on 60 minutes.
Look,
everyone's gone by the ground, yes, no. By 85.
Scoring late goals like that is always the best way to win a football game. Enduring that up until that point is also one of the worst things in football. Yeah, that's why the release of euphoria collectively is so good, isn't it? You know,
it's very Origi, isn't it, in the Champions League final, and that we battered Tottenham, but because it took so long, that goal could have been scored after 27 minutes and we could have won 2-0. And it wouldn't have meant, but the fact that we had to sift through it and then get to it, it makes that goal more special like that.
Yeah.
If Salah scores a second against Man United, that's happened, that he should score. It's still great and everyone still celebrates, but you don't get that absolute...
It's not as high.
Well, and Alisson isn't doing sprints down the pitch and the crowd don't go euphoric, so...
The point is this, it's what we've got out of this, and you're right, living it was much harder than us just basically scoring a goal every 15 minutes or whatever, which we should have done. But it's given us a picture book moment. Yeah. It's given us that moment. I mean, look,
image will be seen for years.
That photograph.
Yeah.
And I just love that, like, in the build up to this, like, there's a lot, like, the official Liverpool Twitter account kept putting, like, famous Liverpool against Man United goals.
And the Reina one.
The Reina and Go goal, which was another last minute goal, 3-1 goal, put below the keeper, where our goalkeeper gets to our player first. And the exact same thing happens this week.
This one means a bit, though, doesn't it? That was like a...
Yeah, but for me, I'm looking at it, I'm going, that's the best performance I've actually seen from Manchester United since the first game of the season that I've watched with my own two eyes. And that tells me that that's their cup final. And that's what it's become.
Watched, by the way?
Probably about 8 or 9.
Oh, really? To be fair.
Yeah, probably. Wow. I've watched more non-Liverpool football this season than for years. And I'm looking because I'm not asked, because it doesn't make any difference. They used to ruin me weekend when I'd watch them and they were close to us and stuff like that. Now we're so far away that I don't really mind if they even win. I don't want them to win.
It doesn't affect you. You're just like, oh, they've won, sat. But if they lose, you get like a
yeah. So it's kind of sound this season. So for me, that's their cup final. That's what they've become. Manchester United have become Everton, where they're now coming to Anfield and raising their game for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, they're 5 points off. Give them a full title, by the way. It's 30 points behind us. We're also 30 points ahead of fifth. And it's just over halfway through the season, Paul. They've been giving it loads.
We have got a game in hand as well.
Yeah, and they've been giving it fucking loads this week in the build-up to it. Man United Football Twitter about how the treble winning side would have beaten this Liverpool side. I'm sorry, first of all, they wouldn't. Second of all, someone put a tweet out and said that after this stage of the season, in their treble winning season, they had 41 points.
Yeah.
That side, that their greatest ever side, had 41 fucking points.
Do you know
what,
though? Do you know what I will say? Maybe they would have beat us, but they wouldn't have won the league that year.
No.
If we were in that league with them. And that's the thing. You can lose a game. And there's no doubt that treble winning side was a very, 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 very good Man United side. It wasn't as good over the period of a season as this Liverpool side is.
This dog shit Man United side is 7 points behind where their best ever side was.
But Chris, this is where it's happening. We've been talking about this for a few seasons now. I remember going and doing a show a year or two ago, and it was like the best teams ever kind of thing. It was some sponsored thing, some magazine or whatever. And I had to go and make a case with Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV when he was talking about the Invincibles. Someone was talking about Barcelona 2008, and I had to pick a Liverpool side to make a case for, and I had to go back to 1988. And that's where they're at now, is that they know even their last title winning side isn't a patch on what we've got now. They can make, you know, it's very debatable even then going back to the ones, but a couple of ones more recently. So they're going back now. They're having to pull out their trump card. They're having to go back to two decades ago to pull out this, the best ever Man United team to even be able to enter into the conversation. And that's where we're at. And that's where they're at. They're now in the wilderness. They're in the wilderness that we've just come out of. It's fucking amazing.
And it's also like, this is the club that have spent the past 25 years calling us History FC. Mm. Saying all you talk about is what you used to be and where you were. Mm. And it's just such a perfect flip that it's just...
Because when we've left that wilderness, there was a big vacuum and it sucked Manchester United into it. Yeah. And they filled it more than comfortably.
Yeah. And then let Arsenal just sit next to them. Yeah,
Arsenal and United were sat on the edge and end of the edge of the wilderness, pointing and laughing at us. And they got caught in our jet stream as we fucking left and got pulled in. And they're like, whoa, what? How did we get in here?
Yeah, it's been like Sheffield United at home.
I think I can see Chelsea just on the edge there. All right, Spurs. No, but it's right. And I think the big thing, somewhat the iconic nature of the goal and the thing, Chris, it's that feeling when that goal goes in and Salah and the shirt comes off and Alisson slides in and does the hug. And then just collectively, I love this. This is what I love about football. We've had a few of these moments more and more under Klopp by each passing season where the crowd just burst into something. I remember Napoli two seasons ago, the Alisson chant just came. It was like it was invented collectively by like 30,000 people all just started going, Alisson, out of nowhere. And this, we're gonna win the league thing. Everyone's kept the powder dry and we've deliberately done it. We've been burned so many times. And it was, and we got a message, I was talking about this in the office, someone messaged our Facebook group to say, like, basically, don't sing that, let that be known or whatever, ridiculous. It wasn't like a decision made by committee. It wasn't like someone went, right, and here's the situation, and then mathematically, because Liverpool have got to win 10 games, right, this is probably a good time to sing it. It was just you had to be there kind of moment. It was fucking...
But this is what this side does. You know, I've got... my match reaction, I was singing we're going to win the league and all that type of stuff. And obviously it just come from the cop and you feel that and you go outside and there's still an energy around everyone outside the grounds, which is brilliant. And then all the comments are, you're getting too cocky and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like... I can't forget 13, 14. Mate, this team has vanished. Those fucking vanquish those memories of 13, 14 to the point where we've won this league. We have won this league. We have battered everybody all throughout the season. Yeah. And there is no way in hell that anybody is going to be catching us this season.
Yeah. And that the confidence to say that at this stage, that shows how good this team is. It's not about us being arrogant because you're saying what every rival fan has been saying since the middle of December. Mm. And it's been us going... We can't say that yet.
Every radio station, every opposition fan, just say it. Been trying to get Liverpool fans to say it. Say it. Say it. Say you've won the league.
Is it your year?
It's your year. Say it's your year.
Okay, we've won it. You're not it.
You fucking bastards.
Arrogance. You don't win anything in January, you daft smart. What are you on about? He's been saying it for months. And it's like you say, it's an emotion thing. The whole cop screamed into it at once. It's not like there was a fucking fella behind the goal with a whiteboard and a pen, like, hang on, now we can do it now, this means we can say it. It was a feeling of, right, we've just beaten Man United, and they're a fallen giant, and they are shit, and we've battered them, but this was the last game that we're looking at going,
it's a weekend that's seen Fernandinho scoring an own goal to rob City of a win. Like, that shit wasn't happening last season. It didn't happen the season before. That was the exact opposite was happening to them. You know, they were getting those little moments were going in their favour. And now all of a sudden, we're getting them in our favour and they're going against other teams as well. That's the
which we don't even need them to.
No, exactly. But that's the point. You've got we walked into that ground knowing that had happened the day before, and then it's all filtering around, or people are watching it in the pubs or whatever, and seeing that then that Leicester have just lost to Burnley as well, haven't missed a penalty, and whether it no one here can see the future, can't. No one on the cop can see the future, but it's just you're right. It's an overriding sense. It keeps coming back to it. See people saying, "Well, you need to keep your powder dry. You need to wait until." And they're picking arbitrary dates in the future. And I saw someone picked an arbitrary date in the future, and it was after Liverpool mathematically could have won the league. And it's like, well, and say it before.
No. You can't sing can when I just, you've won the league. Exactly, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. You can't sing we're gonna win the league when you've fucking won it. It's fucking stupid. It doesn't make sense. It's fucking ridiculous. And the whole point is, we're supporters. So you're supposed to go out there and show your support for a side. And it shouldn't matter whether some fucking MCFC Mahrez parody account gives you shit. Because if you're taking shit off a MCFC Mahrez account and you genuinely think it, that's on you. That's on you, whether you feel bad or not.
I was doing the maths after City drop points. I was like, If Liverpool and City win every game from now on, when we go to the Etihad, the title could be on the line. Like, Liverpool win 11, City win whatever. And someone tweets me back saying, like, you can't be doing that. We've got Man United tomorrow. Big game. Like, you know, get what was it? One step at a time. And I wrote back, like, saying, I'm not playing, mate. Like, honestly, I'm sad. And even after the game, Klopp even referenced, he says, like, the supporters and the
can sing whatever
the people want. Can be. They that's every right. We're not going to do it because we've got a job to do.
Lisa, we're not going to be in. We're not going to be part of that party.
We'll party it when it's done, which is right. But we can, of course we can't. That's the point of being in football. We don't have to, like, we don't have to keep our part. We don't have to be like you know. It's not going to affect us, is it? Like, if we go in and go, oh yeah, it's won.
It's like saying don't celebrate a goal because it might get chalked out by VAR, or it might be offside, or it might be fucking whatever. It might, but again, nobody, it wasn't a collective decision. What we didn't all, like, there wasn't 12,500 or 15,000 or whatever people in the cop, didn't all ask each other at the same time and go, shall we? Shall we? Are we? Can we? Are you going to do it? I'll do it if you do it. Like, we didn't all ask each other. We just did it. And you live with it. As I'm saying, it wasn't a decision made. It was just a
primal, spontaneous
reaction to
also,
things.
I think something else is important. Now, we're at the stage now where if the absolute unthinkable happened and it all went wrong and we lost it, the fact that we've sung we're going to win the league would not make it hurt anymore.
No.
Because it's like we're all going to be at the bottom of the Mersey anyway.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to hear everyone.
Oh, I will never watch a game of football again.
It would be too much. So I think it's time to get excited and start being a bit bullish about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
When are you supposed to celebrate these things? When are you supposed to enjoy football?
Yeah,
if you can't enjoy a goal and you can't enjoy a win unless you're winning the league, how do you survive if you're the other 19 teams in the league? Because they're never winning the league.
Well, if this was United City, I think they'd have been singing it since mid-December.
Treat it in microcosm.
It's only because of our pain that we haven't been.
Yeah, treat it in microcosm, Chris. Pull it back to a game of football. It's like, don't celebrate a goal because they could score a goal. don't celebrate a win until it's won. It's horseshit.
It's all well and good going to your 50th birthday, fella, but you're going to be dead in like 20 years.
Yeah, you could die tomorrow. And how sad would that be? Any sadness of dying will overrule any happiness of being alive.
You're fucking there on the floor. You should have sang, we're going to win the league, mate. That would have made this bearable, you prick.
Oh my God. It is. I mean, you're right. The only reason people don't want it is because those videos still do the rounds of us singing it. We'll be there.
The shirts and
yeah, we were singing it after we beat City in 13-14, and that's why people don't want it sung. And I understand that. We call that being a shit.
But that's on them. that's on them.
Being a massive shit house is that is what that's
again, called. I did that on Twitter. Did not go down well.
they'll call people shithouses for yeah.
You don't think people in the league are a shithouse?
Nobody likes to be told. Nobody likes to be told they're a shithouse because you know why?
Because the shithouse.
but yeah, just so that message we got sent was just simply stop singing. We are gonna win the league. Please get that message across. Well, message. There you go. I'll put the message across. Please stop.
SPB. See you going to every seat in the cop and just telling them like. Is that what you're going to do?
Settle.
Listen, look, I've got this. Look, it's not me. It's him. I've got a really important message for you. Just pass that along your row.
Is he from within the Tesco's?
Right, this is not acceptable. Just like, just put me coat down. And I walk down from fucking 203. And I walk down. I walk down to the front. And I push past the stewards. And I stand in front of David De Gea's goal. Lads, can I have everyone's attention, please? Shush! Stop it!
Who's asked you to say this, Paul?
we should get this put on a banner.
Some shit out on Facebook has told me to get this across to you that you can't sing.
Can we just put this image on a giant banner and have it made for the fucking spying cop lads to just put out before the
game? It's making people too anxious. Can we stop this right now? We have to consider everyone's anxieties.
Do not shoot the messenger.
Right.
Give it to George. Text Georgie.
Oh, yeah.
the next time it goes up.
George hasn't got a smartphone.
Settle down. Just do an Operation Anfield exercise just as it starts kicking off. Just quiet everyone down.
Jesus Christ. Look, you can't... This is the point, right? I was thinking about this the other day, is that in doing all this, the reason why people get anxious about it is because it can be used as... All this stuff can be used as ammunition. You know, so, like, it's banter ammunition. But if the worst happens, you're just given all the Man United and the troll accounts and the Paddy Powers and all the other fucking social media banter AIDS accounts of this world. You're just giving them ammunition, potential for the future. And that's why people are worried about it. And that's what it is. But you can't live that way. And the best way I can describe it is I'm ready to have my heart broken again. But that's all I'll say is that I've got to be ready to love. And if you're ready to love, it means you're ready to have your heart broken again. You're ready to open yourself up to the possibility that it could go all fucking tits up. But I refuse to not live my life based on the fear that, as you were rightly saying, Chris, some teenage nonce who works on Paddy Power's social media account is going to fucking take the piss in fucking June or whatever. Like, yeah, I can't deny myself enjoyment in January. For something that might never happen.
Also, we're normally out the league at this point, so can we just appreciate it for what it is?
Man City fans. I was watching Esteem Company. Love Esteem. Good lad, good mate of mine. But I was watching him talking about next season. In the summer, they'll buy. Next season, I'm like, yes, yes, we've been doing that. Fucking who had January 18th in the sweepstakes before they start talking about next season.
Talking about next season before the fourth round of the FA Cup.
Oh, fucking yes.
Next
anyway.
Year, I'll be higher. That's what he's saying.
Oh, Joe, yeah, is it?
So a Man City doing it only like 2 weeks after Everton. That's got to be a new record as well.
Fantastic. They're going to finish the league on like 86 points, which will have been enough to win the league. Like,
but even
75%.
Because we used to do all them graphics, them fucking shit graphics and all that, and they'll be doing
the like, oh, yeah, that's what all the city social media accounts are going to be this summer, apart from the ones that have turned on Pep. Because they've not got another 100
points. I love that one I saw at the weekend. If you exclude the two games we lost against Wolves, we haven't lost a game when Mahrez has started. Brilliant. Well, why are you excluding the two games against Wolves, mate? Because you lost them. That's okay, Sam.
It's devastating to the stats.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
We never lose Sunday 4 o'clock kickoffs when Pep's had a shave. So, who's the real winners?
Yeah, apart from those two times that I had sex, I'm a virgin. Like, you know, yeah. It's not how it works. Look, the game, because there was a game that happened prior to all the moments of hysteria and joy that followed. Steve,
hello.
We Oxlade Chamberlain got the nod. He was probably the only question mark as who was going to be the third man in midfield. I thought the midfield were absolutely brilliant. I think Ox was probably the least standout of the three, but I thought he had a really good game. We'll come on to that in a second. But Genie Wijnaldum was like. Perfect.
Clarence Seedorf 2.0.
Yeah.
It's Yeah,
you could pull the glasses off as well. Or was it Davids who had the glasses? Davids, oh. Devastating to me point. Can we just pretend it wasn't?
I'm sure he's owned a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, there you go.
At some point, glad to say, they wore like Oakley's or something, were absolutely fine. It's ridiculous, like, how people don't get it. Like, people don't get Gini Wijnaldum. Everybody plays them, loves him. He's in the Ballon d'Or nominees. He's just, like, give the fella some respect. Like, I actually thought Fred played quite well for United, I'll be honest. I thought he had a good game. Wijnaldum is streets ahead of him. Yeah. And he's a £50 million Brazilian lad who was meant to come in and save Man United. And he couldn't lace Wijnaldum's boots. He is just outrageous. And what I love about Wijnaldum, and it's a phrase Chrissy Wilder used when we beat Sheffield United, he said, like, Liverpool have got humility in that they are so good, but they still work their backsides off, and they treat the opposition with respect, but also there's no fear. Yeah. You know, we know that we're not going to stroll up and beat you. We're going to have to put a shift in, and he does it every single time. And whatever, I don't know how he practices or how he does it, but like getting the ball off him is just impossible.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that must just be innate, because I don't think you can practice like sticking your ass out a bit and just like shielding the ball,
mate, in fucking the Wirral. That's what he's doing. He's fucking down there, like fucking that, like that.
I think
I was more worried. I'm very aware of how unstable that chair leg is. And me and Tom had a big conversation about whether Chris could open enthusiastic on this show.
Where did your tea go the other day?
What?
Your tea? How did that go down?
It went all over me. Yeah, the leg collapsed.
It's like eight blocks of wood under there as well. It's just not the bottom. So yeah. You crack on with your surfing, lad.
His balance is unbelievable. I think that's one thing that...
Surfing coach? Klopp brought him in, mate.
That's exactly. Must be that. He must be down on the pier end.
I think it says quite a lot about Wijnaldum that I think, obviously, Fabinho's been out for a month or so. And before that, we were talking that he was the best defensive midfielder in the world. And Jordan Henderson is, you know, now a European Cup winning club captain. It was going to lead Liverpool to their first title in 30 years. And I think Jeannie Wijnaldum is the first midfielder on the team. She's
yeah.
Despite both of them being,
it's ridiculous.
And you know what's mad? Like, there'll be a PFA team at the end. He probably won't be in it.
Yeah.
And he, it's ridiculous. He's at a level where, because he is surrounded by superstars who have the moment. You mentioned moments before, like the Mo Salah moment. Wijnaldum had the better game than Mo Salah by far, but Mo Salah does the moment that lets him get his top off, and everyone loves it.
Yeah.
Wijnaldum rarely gets those. He had obviously at Barcelona's the standout,
yeah.
But you very rarely had the Genie Wijnaldum moment. It's always been like if he scores, it's like the first in a 3-0 or something.
Yeah,
and that's what he doesn't have, but. I don't think he needs it, and I don't think he cares, and that's what's...
Well, he has the Roma moment, doesn't he, away from home, that scores the goal, that basically wins it, but no one remembers it, because everyone just remembers biting the fingers
it went a bit mad. Like, he scores away at Tottenham, was like, well, it doesn't even hit the net. Yeah. It's like cleared off the line and just goes in, the ref gives it off his watch. Like, that's kind of the way Wijnaldum's at.
Yeah.
But you look at him, and he just doesn't care.
Him and Jordan Henderson yesterday, they both could have... Should have, would have had a goal, you know. And if Wijnaldum isn't given offside, and if David De Gea doesn't pull off one of the best saves I've ever seen, there's now Jordan Henderson, they are perfect 10 out of 10 midfield performances, because there's nothing more you can possibly do to add to your game in that regard. And you know, Julius Henderson, I think he tailed off a little bit against Spurs last week, and then he just came back again. You know, both of them defy logic. We're moving other lads. To accommodate them. You know, we've brought in Oxlade-Chamberlain, we've brought in Naby Keita, and neither of those lads, I mean, obviously they have injury issues and what have you, have displaced either of those two lads. And I don't see how they possibly can if they're going to play like that.
They couldn't have done better. And I thought Fred played well. Matic is a crab, but I actually thought he was all right. Like, generally speaking, he puts himself about, he's a big lump in, and he kind of gets stuck in. Pereira's really garbage, so don't worry about him, but... But
Pereira was actually interesting, because he gave Henderson his only really difficult spell of the game, and that was probably the first 10 minutes when they just blocked the pass off to Henderson. So, you know, we go wide from the goalkeeper, very often it's either Trent playing it down the line to Salah, or you play it into you can play it into Jordan Henderson, whatever. And he was functional, but once the lads got a grip on it, once the midfield got a grip of it, they never come near us. And Jordan Henderson, I was saying to Chris, there's a width to the pitch, and it can cover as far as like box to box, but more often than six it doesn't. It's a bit not as wide reaching as that. But if you go into that, Henderson just destroys you. He just comes in, he wins the ball off you, and he strides up the pitch just on
it's his zone of terror. isn't it? I mean, we used to have a lad, a really good mate of ours, whose zone of terror is roughly 10 centimetres around his right foot. That's all it was in five-a-side. But Jordan Henderson's zone of terror is like a third of the football field, where if you come into it, he's going to throw elbows, he's going to push it off, he's going to grab you, and he's going to kick the ball, and he'll do anything to win it. He threw an elbow in at Mata, when Mata wasn't even on the pitch at one point yesterday. That's how good he was. He'd already pushed Mata off the pitch, then threw an elbow in at him, just for good measure.
Yeah. I know we were sort of... That started as a conversation about Gini Wijnaldum, and it sort of merged into Henderson. But I've got to say, sort of, because on this show for the past couple of years, I've been very critical of Henderson, and he's silenced everyone, including me, because I said this on Twitter yesterday. I think Henderson had a little bit for a few years of imposter syndrome.
Yeah,
I think he felt a bit like, I'm in Steven Gerrard's shoes here, and I'm not the player he was, and I don't really belong as the captain of this football club. And I think winning that European Cup has just blown that off him. And he was really good last season, and he's been phenomenal this season. And I think having players around him like Wijnaldum are stepping up. And then I think he's still better as an eight. He's filled in the six.
Yeah.
But I think from working with Fabinho, that will have improved him in that position as well. And I just... like, it's now at a point where if Henderson's not on the team sheet, you're a bit like,
well, we said this. I'm going to respectfully disagree. I think that's a fan view rather than Jordan Henderson's view. I don't think he's ever really felt like that for a long time, to be honest with you. I think, you know, when you see the back end of 13-14 and what he meant to this side then, I think he knew then that he was good enough. Not good enough to be Steven Gerrard, but good enough to lead a Liverpool side. And I think over the course of the last few years, it's a marked improvement, of course. But I really do think we still view him as the captain who took over from Steven Gerrard, whereas I think he proved himself to his teammates and to the manager at least 2 or 3 years ago.
I don't think he did prove himself to his teammate and his manager, but I think there was something within him, because there's a level up this season.
There's also Klopp makes players better.
And
Jordan Henderson's now 29, so he's had his peak years are last season, this season, probably next year. 27 to 30, I always think where midfielders tend to be at their absolute best. Obviously, you get the exception Worldies, who are Steven Gerrard, who are brilliant from 20 or whatever, but Henderson coming to us, and if you look at the pitches now, he was just a kid.
Yeah.
He was a young kid, and it probably was a move too early for him that stage. He probably could have done with the Sunderland to West Ham to Liverpool, you know what I mean, rather than the big step.
Yeah.
So he's kind of learned the hard way, and he's been through some tough times. He tries to, you know, manager tries to sell him, he tries to get rid of him and all that. At this moment in time, if we'd have signed him a field in the summer, like a lot of people said, you know, we could probably phase Henderson out. It's great what he's done. If we'd have signed someone in the summer and brought him in and he'd have played like this, we'd have all been like, well, that 75 million quid was worth it. And I think you mentioned before, well, you know, the Caters and the Fabinos and the Chamberlains. Not only does signing them obviously improve your squad, it pushes everyone else up.
Yeah. Mm.
Henderson wants to play a game. He knows Fabinho's back training now. If I want to keep stay on this pitch, I need to play better.
It shouldn't be underestimated, though, because I think what in where you write is the, what the European Cup does to everyone. It's done to Klopp. Klopp's not daft. He was aware of that, like the curse that he was carrying. He knew it. Klopp is a dead superstitious fella. All people involved with footy are. They just are. And so it's freed him up. You know what I mean? It's mad. It's mad the difference it's made in him, and that there's confidence that goes out everyone, because all of a sudden you've got this massive big trophy that you can just shove in anyone's face and throats, and you get all those Liverpool legends who you meet and you bump into on a daily basis, who maybe they've got a little bit of a, you know, the nice to you, but you know they just carry an air above you or whatever. It's amazing, I bet those type of
conversations would always be really good, really nice, but now I reckon those players, rushes and all that, would probably go, I'd love to have played for you.
And just
the European Cup's probably done that. They're probably all walking and go, I'd love to play in one of your sides, mate.
Yeah.
And that must give him a boost.
Absolutely.
As well.
Gerrard said it on Carragher's podcast, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's like, he now regrets going to LA Galaxy because he could have got 6 months under Jurgen Klopp and just being able to work and play with him.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's true, isn't it? I think that's true of Endo and Genie. They've got that competitive spirit. They're both nice lads, but they're also not prepared to go down without a fight. And that epitomises absolutely everything that we're
so
trying to do.
So selfless as well. Yeah. They know for a fact that they know the score. They're there to run their arses off to get the ball to Trent and Robertson to get an assist or to get the ball to the front three and score.
Yeah.
And to do that week in, week out, knowing that my job is basically,
is it water carrier?
Yeah, it's the old you know, fellas to carry the piano, a few to play it.
Yeah.
And they know they're the piano carriers, and they've got no problem
with
it.
But the thing about that game yesterday, the performance, when Alden gets in, as a goal disallowed, Jordan Henderson has the shot, he has a moment where he powers into the box and it just doesn't quite bobble right for him. And he has another couple of moments when he's powering down the wing. And they're the actions of fellas who are absolutely in the prime, at the prime of their career. They back themselves. And you're right, and I think the imposter syndrome, I don't think is incorrect. I don't think it's as pronounced. I think we make it more pronounced because I think there was a watershed moment when he lifted the European Cup, where everyone just went, you know what, fair play, Hendo. You know, we kind of let all that past go with it. But there is definitely, you can see it in him. And that's what I'm saying, it's who he's learned off in some regards, the Fabinho thing. Jordan Henderson became our number six. Who were the number sixes at the club prior to him? Steven Gerrard, he was never a number six. You know, I did half a season in 13-14 in it and was all right in that, you know, I had a bit of a renaissance. Lucas Leiva, who was a box-to-box midfielder, converted to be it, ended up at centre-half sometimes. He was never a world-class DM. Now we've got a world-class DM in, and Jordan Henderson gets to go, oh, right, okay. That's what you meant. That's what it's meant to look like. Okay. I can do a bit of that.
Why didn't you just say that, Jürgen?
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be like Fabinho. Virgil van Dijk, Adam, is absolute perfection. We haven't really given him a lot of love in recent weeks because it feels a bit superfluous. Like, we don't need to give Virgil van Dijk love because he's so good and everyone knows it. But he bangs the header in. I think he's a little unlucky to get for the goal to ultimately be disallowed. I don't think he goes into it, you know, to deliberately foul David De Gea. He was an absolute magnet for the ball. Every ball they played in, whether it was on the floor, whether it was in the air, it just went to him and he dealt with everything.
Just before I answer that question, I just want to say, I love that, like, we're so good at footy and we've enjoyed this game so much that we must have been talking for nigh on an hour now and we are a third of the way through this agenda.
Which is a pretty short agenda, to be fair, by standards. Like, yeah.
It's mostly adverts, which we've not even done yet.
Yeah, so you've got
that to come, lads.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, absolute bullshit call, and it was not a foul. David De Gea just shits himself, drops the ball. And also, what no one seems to have mentioned is, it falls to their defender, and we win it back.
Yeah.
After he's dropped the ball, and I'm not even sure whether it's eligible to be disallowed because of that, because it's a different phase of play. They've had the ball back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nonsense for me. He gets what was quite an embarrassingly easy goal from the corner, like a very simple run. He's being marked by some 12-year-old kid who doesn't know how to mark the best centre back the game has ever seen. So, and then at the back, he's just flawless for the whole game. I don't really know what else to say.
Like,
when someone's as good as him, it's hard to compliment him because it just gets boring to say the same
thing.
No,
it's true.
Paul, you mentioned that he's the greatest that's ever done it, and people sometimes say it's like a throwaway, or you can't say that because he hasn't done it. I promise you, he is the best defender I've ever seen. Like, I've been watching footy for 15, 16, 10, whatever years, and no one come, no one's as good as him. And the Terrys and the Vidages and the Ferdinands and absolute, you know, your Nesters and kind of, I've seen them all,
yeah,
and they're all absolutely brilliant, and he is better than every single one of them. He has got no faults in his game. He does nothing wrong. Like, he just doesn't, he's got no weakness. He's like a cheap.
Even his one weakness, which is that really annoying sliced volley clearance that he does once every two games, has led to like three goals that we've scored.
They can't shoot from the edge of the box, but somehow we still end up getting goals off it. He's like, you make a character on a computer game where you're allowed to put everything to 99.
Yeah, yeah.
He is absolutely,
it really, really, really is like that.
It's ridiculous. He is so good. The goal, I mean, it's nonsense from Man United. It's absolutely ridiculous for that kid. I mean, poor lad. He's got no chance. And like, I get that they're zonal, and you should block Van Dijk off. I mean, that kid's got no chance. Whoever their biggest, strongest player is should be on him. Matic or someone.
I was talking to Ross about this morning, and I just think that's good coaching by us, to be honest with you, because if they are zonal, you know where Man United's players line up.
Yeah.
And you just go and attack the zone where the young kid is. You could put Harry Maguire there and he'd still go and attack the zone
with Tim Cahill. Tim Cahill just find himself in that gap when we were zonal. And I remember one time, Liverpool finally cottoned onto it, and I think we were zoning, but we man-marked him with their couch and just said, just get in his way.
Yeah.
But Steve, even if they man-mark him, right, Maguire's not getting his head off the turf, it's too heavy. So who's stopping him?
Gravity is fighting against
you. Generally, you put Maguire up against Van Dijk, who's better in the air?
No, but I think you can... You can't beat... Yeah. I don't think you can ever stop. If the ball's perfect on the header, right, he is unstoppable. You've got to do something to disrupt him. You've got to block him off or knock him or make it so that he can't just go, oh, there's the ball, head.
You've got to get a foul on him that isn't going to be given as a foul.
Yeah, just to little nudges and stuff.
Like, you have, it, like...
Gomez does well, because Gomez kind of blocks off, doesn't he? It is a well-worked goal, like you said. It does my head sometimes in the pool, like, the short corners and stuff, and I get it. I always go the near post flick-ons, and we have scored off it. I've still got the theory that if you've got 10 corners and every single one of them goes towards Van Dijk, he will score a goal.
Yeah.
And it's just law of averages that it's impossible to stop him.
Yeah.
And I just keep doing it. Just every time he is like, it's outrageous how good he is. Like, I've never seen anything like it, to be honest. He is like, he's the Leo Messi level of defenders where it's impossible to be better. Like, there's nothing he could do that would make him better.
He does improve when his song's getting sung, though. Like, I genuinely believe that he takes it to, rather than 99 for everything, he goes to 100 when his songs go, because he sing that song and he knocks that ball to Salah and you're like, oh my god, he's feeding off this.
Yeah.
We're making him a better player here. That's my theory on it.
Yeah, 100% right. I don't think there's any evidence.
You can't disprove it.
His song is like the star on Mario.
Having a very mobile Empire State Building playing centre half.
It's just incredible. Just edging like, incredible.
And Harry Maguire, with all due respect, well, in fact, no, with no respect, because he doesn't deserve any. He can't lace his boots.
Yeah. I was looking at him
I think Williams laces Maguire's boots for him before the game.
Because if he has to lean over his head, he'll pitch over. I looked at them and I looked at Maguire and he's fine, isn't he?
Yeah, he's fine.
But you look at the levels of them playing off in the back and they're all creaming the kecks over that kid they had, at left back. And he's
sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But like this Brandon Williams lad, he's clearly all right, isn't he?
Sure.
But you see moments in that game when the chips are down and he's panicking because he's a kid. And they're being led from the back by Maguire, and that's the difference is in those situations, you turn to your big players. You've been made the captain. You turn to your big players to get your out. And we're turning to Virgil van Dijk, and just looking at him just makes you feel calm.
He's just big like me.
You know how on airplanes, like the airbags drop down from the ceiling, they should just drop pictures of Virgil van Dijk down and everyone just be like, oh, this is sad, isn't it? Everything's going to be okay. Dead. But, at least you go out peacefully. That's the difference in what they've got. Maguire is fine. And as far as centre-halves go, and as far as English centre-halves go, he is good, isn't he? He's good in the air.
He's a £25 million player.
Yeah.
That's what Maguire is. Like, if United had signed him for 20-odd million in the summer, you'd go, good bit of business that. You know what? He's not perfect. You're not comparing him with, like, the best defenders in the league, but he's doing a job, and, like, he's got flaws in his game, and he's not that quick, and it's because they paid so much that we're comparing him to Van Dijk, who I'm pretty sure could literally do anything. I think he could win Wimbledon this year if he wanted to.
He'd be a big save volleyer, yeah. Definitely.
Like, the comparison is because of the money that was paid, but there's actually...
But it's
there,
but like Maguire,
sorry,
Maguire is one of those centre-halves who goes into a good back four and looks good.
Yeah,
that's what Dejan Lovren does.
Yeah.
Dejan Lovren goes into a good back four and looks good. So does Joe Matip. Van Dijk goes into a bad back four and makes everyone great.
Yeah,
and that's the difference. That's the thing that money can't buy. That's just ridiculous.
I was amazed, like, when they go every single time, and it's obviously not luck, because the plan is obviously avoid Van Dijk with your crosses and your balls and stuff, whatever. You mentioned he's a magnet. He's just in the perfect position every time. Near post, cut it off sound. I'll turn around and just shout at someone, or big ball into the box, big header away, big booming header, everything. Even, you know, they're throwing the kitchen sink, they throw Harry Maguire up front, and Van Dijk just heads it away. It's absolutely fine. He's unbelievable.
I look at their team, and that's just... there's nothing wrong with... De Gea's a good goalkeeper. Maguire's a good centre-half. Wan-Bissaka's a good right-back. Lindelof's all right.
When he's on off his arse, Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, well, exactly. And this is the point I'm kind of getting to.
Three
times.
In the context of your own football club, which is the one you watch the most, they must be looking at that and going, well, Wan-Bissaka, because they love Wan-Bissaka and they love the fact that he tackles. If you're slide tackles because he knows he's good at it.
But it's a sign. Exactly,
it's a sign for me. But there's genuinely times in the game where I think he lets someone have a yard on him, so he can slide in. It happened a couple of times. It's a sign of weakness. If you're it's like having a pot shot from distance when you're a defensive midfielder. More often, you know what I mean. Like, it's a sign you've run out of ideas. If you're going to ground, it's because you fucked something up. You're out of position. You're making something last ditch. Now there's exceptions to that. Obviously, but that's the levels we're at right now. You can see him crossing the halfway line, hasn't got a fucking clue. You can see when they're back five being pressed and they're starting to panic and they're going back to De Gea and he doesn't know what to do with it. They're all fine, and this just must be what it was like when they had Stam at the back and Ferdinand the Bridge, and they were looking at us and we had some really good lads.
Nowhere near.
But we're just
what we've got is we've got a modern day fullback version 2.0, because I think the fullback has changed from the 90s and stuff. And what they've got is a young Nathaniel Clyne. Yeah. And I'd say that with actually the greatest of respect, because he is a good fullback, Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah.
But he's not a revelation. He's not a different maker in any way, shape, or form. He's not moving. He's not moving the position on in any way, shape, or form. He's just a good, solid fullback.
Do you find it like?
Who's got as many assists as Alisson?
He has, yeah. I found it intriguing that he...
You've got more than Jesse Lingard.
that was the channel that we targeted. Because you look at it on paper, if you think, we're going to target the team's weakness, you would go at the kid at left-back and Luke Shaw playing left-centre-half. I mean, yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just nonsense. You'd think that that's what you'd go for. But Liverpool targeted Wan-Bissaka, and there were times, literally, he was spinning in circles. Yeah. He was like a cat chasing his tail. He had no idea. He was getting ran from pillar to post, and it was... We had Mane, Robertson, and then it was Wijnaldum or Henderson or Firmino dropping in, and he didn't have a clue. He was falling over.
Well, the amount of times the 1-2 did him,
yeah.
And because I mean, look, a good 1-2 will always win, but he didn't seem to be onto it every single time. He'd be 4 yards back, not one.
Firmino sits him down, doesn't he, in the second half? And that's the thing for me. And I was asked this because I had the Stretford Paddock lads in, and they were like, "Oh, you're worried, Wan-Bissaka. Best tackle in the league, going up against Mane. How's Mane going to handle him?" I was like, "Mane will love it, mate. They'll love having a lad who dives in like that, because you know what he's going to do. You know, it's just like dangling. It's like having a new kitten. And you just have that piece of fluff on a string and you're like, where you dickhead? You know what I mean? Like, whip it away and they go flying after it. That's what he's like. You know what he's going to do. And that's just, again, this is the point, is that they're all right, aren't they?
It's levels of football, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're a very, well, they're a half-decent Europa League team, because that's kind of what they are.
Yeah,
and we're the champions of Europe.
Yeah.
Could be, that's what we are.
All that being said, because you mentioned it about their overall performance, they gave it a good go. The last 10 minutes, it was probably more nervy than it needed to be. I don't think the Lallana sub, and whether it's coincidental timing of that, you know, them really going for it or what, from my perspective, because inevitably I only ever really watch the lads in red. There's just shapes in the way of what our lads are trying to do. We lost a little bit of control, it felt, when Lallana came on the pitch. And it's mad because Ox was looking really strong. When we were really on top, there was a couple of times when they went to break out and he just bullied people off the ball and whatever. You could see how angry and frustrated he was coming off. But what do you think, coincidence or
no? I think, you know, I said this actually after Spurs. I think the plan was to take Ox off again. And, you know, it proves to me how much confidence the Klopp has got in his side that at 1-0 against Tottenham and 1-0 against Manchester United, he's going to do the sub that's right for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and right for him until the end of the season. Now, I do think that they started to push players further up. I tend to agree with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, weirdly, and thought they did have a 25-minute spell where they were really good and maybe half an hour. The difference was they didn't create opportunities for all of that half an hour. We created opportunities when they were attacking us.
You got the one with Martial in, haven't
they? They had 10 minutes at the end before we scored where they actually crafted anything. And even when the crafting stuff, and this might have happened slightly earlier, the Martial one where he blazes over the bar, that is a consequence of Alisson being very good. We had it for years against De Gea, and you've mentioned it over the last couple of years, where every striker needs to thinks they need to hit the top corner because the keeper's so good. That's what we always used to do against De Gea. De Gea's lost that fear factor now, by the way, that you can just hit it through his legs and it's sound and you're going to score a la Salah. But with Martial, he's six foot in front of the goal and he's blazing it at the top bin instead of just hitting the target.
Well, it's that, but also I think we did this on the show last week, is that you're finally into the box. This is it. Oh my God, I finally had this opportunity. I've got to take this opportunity, because if I don't take this opportunity, I've waited 75 minutes for me one chance and then it's gone, because that all happens in the space of a fraction.
You know, we're saying like the reason that he get in at that time is because it's still 1-0, and we were very, very wasteful. No, Salah's misses is horrendous. I agree with you on the goal, by the way, on the Van Dijk Firmino goal, is that there's no point having VAR anymore. You might as well get rid of that, eh? It's now VAR. Yeah. He's the ref, because he's decided that is a clear and obvious. The ref has made a bad, bad error, and it's a clear mistake. So it's not VAR, it's VR.
Yeah.
You don't need the ref on the pitch. Because that's nonsense. It was, if we're getting told clear and obvious, then there's no way it is. If the ref gives a foul, I don't think VAR should overrule it. Mm-hmm. But flip side, he hasn't given a foul, so I don't see why you would need to. The ref's standing there, he's seen it. And that's the problem with it, is that at the minute now, it just looks like, well, you don't really need, the guy on the pitch just needs to kick off and toss a coin or whatever. He doesn't need to do anything. And it was a shame. Really.
Occasionally get his head pecked by Jordan Henderson over 90 minutes.
It's a shame because, you know, Firmino needs that. I think he needs a home goal. I think, ultimately he doesn't, because where we are is stuff, but it would do him the world. He looked so happy and so
what a finish as well.
Yeah, and it's a worldy goal. Yeah, it's the composure that Martial doesn't show. So that's the key, is that we get to the point where it's a bit nervy and United have a chance, but I think we get done by a ref. And to be honest, again, after the fact, like you mentioned before, I'm actually quite glad we got diddled by VAR a bit, because there's another narrative gone. Yeah. You're only top because of VAR.
I must admit, I genuinely thought in the ground that it was a foul. I really thought it was a foul, because they're always giving us fouls.
Exactly.
And it wasn't until I watched the highlights back that I was like, that's not as cut and dry as all that. I think he makes a genuine attempt at the ball. I think it's up to De Gea to be stronger and to come out and get the ball. And Van Dijk does sound. Why I think they've overturned it and made it as easy is because three players stop around it. Yeah. And I think that's probably gone to the...
What a precedent that sets, though.
But they shouldn't. But I think that makes the VAR ref his job much easier, because he goes, they all stop there.
I actually disagree. I think, to be honest, if the ref had given us a foul, I'm so certain this isn't a foul that I think VAR should overturn it.
Yeah. I think VAR doesn't overturn it, just because I think, as Chris said, I watched it in the game, I was surprised the play continued, because they are just giving us fouls on the goalkeeper. And that's the point. We had a little chat about this after the game. The referee lets it go tells you that it's fine, because referees always give that. And I know it's this notion of they're being told to let the play run or whatever, but not in them situations. They just give free. If it's a foul, it's a foul. Especially
because United get the ball, he could just blow his whistle.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Or play advantage or whatever. It doesn't. I don't think he's not playing advantage. No. He's just not giving us a foul. It's making. I'm glad
how
it doesn't
can
matter.
Van Dijk go for that ball any further?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't think there's a conception, like, you know, it has to be deliberate, it has to be. You can foul from back, you can jump into a goalie and it be a foul.
But he doesn't.
I know, he does. He kind of touches his arm, and he kind of does. But that's what I'm saying, is that there's no margin for error now. Is that
so? Is the foul that Van Dijk is jumping in the space that David De Gea ideally like to be?
I think Van Dijk knows what he's doing. I think he is trying to impede him. And they say, VAR said Van Dijk isn't going for the ball. Well, that's nonsense, because he tries to edit it. I think it's one of those where there's no, there has to be, again, in other sports, NFL, they have, you know, inconclusive, the call stands. We'll keep it as it is, we're not changing it. In cricket, they have umpires call. We're not too sure, so we'll stick with the ref.
Yeah.
There's, it's not VAR, it's VR. He is the ref. He has made that guy that is a Tierney has overruled a decision that isn't clear and obvious.
But to be fair, up until that point, we were seeing nothing overturned. You know, for the vast majority of the season. Well, that's the thing is that all of a sudden it's
against Everton, De Gea got his head clocked and it was a goal.
And
Calvert-Lewin just smashed him in the face and he said no foul. I wonder if it's a consequence of it's evolving and I understand it's a process. It's just
it shouldn't be underestimated that Craig Pawson's another terrible referee.
And Tierney on the VAR.
Yeah. Look, there we go. Look, there's loads of little moments from the game, but I think the takeaway from this is that Liverpool are fucking amazing and they're going to win the league. Everyone in agreement?
Yeah,
agreed. We've mentioned the results of the weekend. City draw them with Palace, thanks to a wonderful Fernandinho own goal. Burnley taking the win against Leicester. The lads on the Around the League show are going to be covering more on that on the RedmenTV.com. Make sure you head over there and sign up. It's completely free for the first month. You're going to get that show every single week. You're going to get all the exclusive interviews we've done with some of the Liverpool's best and brightest from the past, the present, and the future as well. And a whole host of other shows to keep you entertained throughout this incredible run from the mighty Reds, the RedmenTV.com. Get involved. Gents, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It really
every week. I'm running out of ways to say how good this all is.
Virgil van Dijk good.
It's Virgil good. Yeah.
Liverpool Football Club are currently as good as Virgil van Dijk.
Yes. Absolutely, and that is how good our life is in general. Thank you very much for watching, for listening, for liking, for sharing, and for subscribing, and we'll see you all very soon. Ta-da.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.